Welcome back to Legal News and Review, coming to you recorded from Alpine Jaguar in Fort Lauderdale. Once again, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
Legal News and Review is back on the air. I'm Philip Bell, the moderator for the program, along with legal panel host Charles Moorhead and Gary Singer. And today we're talking with an attorney, what I consider one of the best out there. And her practice is solely focused on appellate law. Her firm is as well. And some quite notable decisions as well. As a matter of fact, she even reached a level of national exposure regarding a Forbes, seen in Forbes in December 28th, 2015. You know, coming back, I was going to talk about, and I'd like to address the issues regarding personal injury, which is, you know, when you're injured and you're really injured, it's not like you see those goofy lawyers, oh, he got me $400,000, you know? And that's not done properly. They don't get that, and that's just my opinion on that. If you read the little disclaimer, which you can't see, but if you freeze your TV, you can see it. But that's part of your practice, correct, Robin, is the personal injury appeal, where you're not happy with the decision. And there's case there. There's a reason why. Again, it's the law and what's recorded, correct?
Sure. It's part what's in the record, what's the law, the procedure, if there's due process issues. But, yes, personal injury is something that we do with our firm. It's definitely a portion of our practice. And those are typically done on contingency fees. And we typically represent the plaintiffs in those personal injury cases, typically against the insurance companies. Occasionally, we have represented the insurance companies in certain circumstances as well. And so we can be the appellee or the appellant bringing the appeal, saying they didn't like the decision, or the appellee trying to uphold it. And, you know, it goes both ways, with sometimes the insurer being the one who appeals and sometimes the person who's injured being the one that appeals.
Yeah, we're going to, in Legal News and Review, we're going to have an interesting new PI case in the 4th District.
You know, I'd like to chime in there. Certainly in a personal injury matter, a mistake by the judge in allowing evidence to come in or keeping evidence out makes all the difference with the jury's verdict. Without that decision, if it was improper, the jury would have awarded more, or the jury would have awarded nothing if it would have been heard. So the appeal process in personal injury is really a very common occurrence in cases. That's why we say the best settlement is better than the worst settlement is better than the best lawsuit. And the reason we say that was because the appellate court also is a way of delaying cases and paying out money. And many of these personal injury insurance companies will take an appeal virtually on almost any case if it's not within the scope of what they expected.
But isn't justice delayed justice denied? Because that could hold up a disbursement for years.
That's correct.
You know, it does not seem fair from that aspect, but again, there are rights on both sides. There's creditor rights, and of course there's debtor rights. But when it comes to appeals, it's pretty much clear cut. You don't go before a jury, you go before judges. And it's adjudicated through the process of written and oral arguments. Am I correct?
That's exactly correct. And when you're going to the appellate court, it can be appealing a judge's ruling, in the sense of it was a trial before a judge, or it was a trial before a jury. But the appellate court does review those. And I just wanted to say that, you know, there are a lot of times these things, unfortunately, are used for delay, but there are, unfortunately, a lot of erroneous judgments, and people feel that though the justice system has not served them, and why I'm so passionate about what we do is that we are often able to reverse an erroneous opinion in the erroneous order in the lower court and get justice for that client, and then their faith in the justice system is restored. And that is the purpose of the appellate courts, to be able to oversee what the trial courts are doing. And really they base it on the law and the procedure, and it's very black and white, whereas the trial court, you're shooting from the hip. There's a lot of strategy involved. There might be some politics involved. Of course, you know, judges are trying to do their best, but they make mistakes, and that's why we have the appellate judges and justices.
But, you know, we were talking off-air, and I would love to do a separate show just of off-air comments, because you speak the language of appellate law. And Gary was saying that, you know, lawyers that do appeals should have a special certification. You've been practicing appellate law for how long now?
Over 15 years.
Exactly. And somebody who, what I call the door attorneys, and anything that comes through that door.
Right.
They don't have the experience or breadth, but you work with other attorneys. That's where you get your business from. Majority is referrals. You do take people that call you, say, hey, I'm not happy with this guardianship or whatever the situational need is. But primarily you are the go-to, you're the go-to woman for the practice of appellate law.
Yes, thank you. We get a lot of our referrals from other attorneys, and we also provide litigation support to other attorneys. One thing we didn't, you know, just talk about, just to mention, we help the attorneys in the lower court preserve the issues for appeal, or maybe come in on some particular motion so that if they know it's going to appeal or suspect it's going to appeal, we do all the things that we can to assist them in preserving those arguments, because if they're not preserved, they can't be raised.
Yeah, my understanding is that's probably one of the most important things the trial lawyer can do is preserve, make a good record in case it goes up on appeal.
That's right.
Right. I would agree with that. I've had cases in my experience that I would be arguing with the judge. He didn't want to hear it. He just cut me off. And he looked at me and says, one more word, I'm holding you in contempt. And I continued on and I said, but first I prefaced it by saying I'm making an offer of proof. And a lot of judges don't even know what that is. But an offer of proof is where I'm not talking to the judge anymore, you see. I'm talking to the appellate court. And they have no right to cut me off and I could continue on. So as I continue on, I take as long as I want, and the judge is tapping his foot. Many times the judge then reverses their ruling because you protected the record and you gave the full statement of what your thought was, even though the judge was cutting you off. And protecting the record is everything in an appeal. You don't have an appeal without protecting the record, because there's nothing to appeal unless you protect it and preserve it in the record. You make the objection.
But the reality is oftentimes it's difficult to make a record as one you would love to be using as an appellate lawyer. When you're the trial lawyer under the gun with the jury sitting there staring at you, and you're on your eighth sidebar, and your objections have all been overruled, and basically you are now beating your head against the wall, you know, sometimes we make strategic decisions that if I have any shot at winning this case in the long run, I'm going to have to give up these certain things. And, you know, it's very easy
That's
to
correct.
Criticize in hindsight.
That's correct.
Somebody who,
I
quote,
actually
doesn't make
that
the record.
I actually had a case with Baker McKenzie where they were arguing about a disbarment of an attorney who was a witness. And, the judge did not want to consider that. And then they didn't preserve that for the appeal. Later on, they made a mistake in the, they did a rehearing motion and they didn't preserve it. If you make the argument and you don't preserve it in the rehearing motion, you waive it.
So, not
you
to cut
to
you
put
off,
everything in the rehearing motion.
Ron, we're getting a little I have a question I want to ask Robin about Florida law. It's one thing that's always been very curious about. So, you got this appeal because someone feels the trial judge made a mistake. Both parties are now going to spend a whole nother big bucket of money. And it comes down that the judge did make a mistake. Is there any repercussion? I know it's not monetarily, but what's the repercussion on the judge for having a mistake made, for being found that they made a mistake?
Well, there's really no repercussion on a judge if it's just an error of law, because, you know, judges are human, people make mistakes, and it is unfortunate, but litigation is expensive, and I don't disagree that settling certainly gives you the finality, but basically, if you know that judge has made a mistake, and you're the party that's trying to defend it, the attorney that's worth his or her salt is going to concede error and not continue to fight that, and in fact, you can be sanctioned, and it has happened. I remember the Boca Burger case from many years ago here in Florida is a case where the appellee defended a lower court's order and was sanctioned for doing so because it was incorrect. So the party who is trying to go forward and say that that lower court judge's order was correct, if in fact that's not the case and it's clearly not the case, they can be sanctioned. So it's not the judge, but it's the parties. But I just wanted to circle back real quickly and talk about the appellate attorney's role in the trial court. You know, Charles, your point was well taken, where, you know, it's hard to do everything when you are litigating. I mean, I've litigated. I was a prosecutor. And, you know, from time to time, when we're begged, we come into the trial court. It's very hard to do it all. But when you have an appellate attorney sitting next to you, I had a trial not too long ago where my attorney said, "What's the point of objecting? I keep getting overruled." And I said, "Because we're making a record." And you have to, that's what we do as appellate attorneys. We're protecting that record and we're helping keep that trial attorney thinking, you know, in not only about the case that's going on, but then the next case that's going to happen.
Well, briefly, let me talk about fees and the appeal is entitled to recover costs for litigating an appeal, you know, prevailing party. There was a case that Charles brought up, and people that listen to the program housed on the Broward County Bar's website, just click on the media page, you go right on to Legal News and Review. You'll find that there. And Charles, that was a case that actually, it was not adjudicated really in the courts. It was done through legislature, Charles. Remember? It was one where they said, no, you're not going to get your attorney fees.
Yeah, you're talking about the claims bill.
Yeah, the claims bill.
Sure. Yeah, that's just an example of where the courts can run roughshod over what I think the intention of the law is if they don't stick to the rule of law. But that'll be before the Florida Supreme Court here directly. We'll see what happens.
That's exactly what I wanted to go to. So yeah. That is an appealable decision, even though it was a legislation decision, right?
In a way of speaking, what's happened is after the legislature had made their claims bill such that the lawyers were completely cut out of the recovery. The lawyers went back to the appellate court and have joined issue on this and are now going to make the court say, hey, it's an illegal contract. You just can't interfere with our contract.
Exactly.
Well, and we actually have a case that's coming up. We have a case in the 4th DCA where our oral argument was put on hold because of that exact case.
Sure.
We have a very similar case that's coming up right behind, so we'll be very interested to see. But, yes, it's the legislature. You know, that's why we have the separation of powers. The legislature makes the laws, and the courts get to say whether or not they're constitutional.
So Robin, you know, I've seen oftentimes the court will dispense with oral arguments, saying they don't need it. They're going to decide just on the briefs, which I understand is within their rights. But that leads me to the question of how important is oral argument to the appellate process?
You know, different judges have told us over the years in different various seminars that some of them think it's more important than others. I mean, you are really arguing off the briefs. If a party asks for an oral argument, it doesn't mean they're going to get it. In fact, there's some cases where sua sponte that one of the judges on the panel will say, "I want an oral argument." Sometimes there's associate judges that are sitting, in the appellate capacity, and you know they're sort of just kind of there for a short period of time. They're not officially an appellate judge, and maybe they'll want to hear an oral argument. But I like to have the oral arguments because if we are trying to reverse something below, we get to explain our position in person. And when it's beneficial is when it's a complex issue that you may need to sort of sort out what's going on. It might be a complex fact pattern. I remember specifically we had an oral argument a couple of years ago at the 4th DCA, and one of the judges really got it, but the other two judges were sort of wanting to go the other way, and the oral argument really turned it around. Oftentimes that doesn't happen. Oftentimes it's just an opportunity to argue off the briefs and to be able to state the position. But again, it's just really it's for the judges to get their questions out so you can answer their questions, more so for than the attorney to make their case, because you're hoping the judges, and they typically do, have read the briefs and they have questions and they're at oral argument to really sort of ask them.
Would an attorney?
I agree with that. Robin, how many times have you gone before the appellate court where the court, you start out with your oral argument, you never get there. they're hitting you with the questions right away, and you then they cut you off. You had your 15 minutes, and you're done.
I hope that happens, to be honest with you, because that means that they've engaged and they know what's going on. I've had oral arguments where I've had no questions from the panel, and that tells me
nothing.
They're not ready to really discuss it. So I want, as an appellate attorney, I want those questions.
Right. I believe oral arguments are very important, and I've experienced that when I've done many appeals. When you have a case where they don't ask the question, it's still important because maybe they're not up on everything, and now they're learning maybe for the real first time what the case is really about.
True.
And why it's so important to have the appeal.
Well,
so
let me ask. Let me interject
here, real
quick.
Questions, then you get this full oral argument. They don't interrupt you, and you give everything you say, and you feel like you had a day in court too.
I can't picture anybody interrupting you, but let me interrupt you real quick. When you have multimillion-dollar cases, you all have had them. Gary, Charles, my brother. Is it your best interest to have somebody like Robin sitting there and protecting the rights for appeals, because that's what she does?
I think it totally depends on the case and your comfort level and what the issues are. I think sometimes it can be a distraction. Sometimes it can be a big plus. And I think that's a case-by-case call.
Yeah, I have to 100% agree. Each case is different. There's definitely times where bringing Robin in would be huge. I had an opportunity almost to bring in a very, very good, talented trial attorney for a jury trial, because we're not really a jury trial firm. We're a judge trial firm. And then it turned not into a jury trial, and we didn't need the expert trial attorney anymore. So, you know, so it depends on the case and the needs of the case. What do you think?
Well, I think when you have a case that may be going to appeal, and maybe I'm a little biased on this subject, I think that you should protect your record, especially if there's large sums of money involved, if there's a contingency case. And, you know, we evaluate those things. We will only come in if it's a contingency, if we think it's a worthwhile case to do that on. So there's really no harm, in my opinion, to have an appellate attorney protecting your record. All it can do is the best for you. The cases where, you know, it might be, you know, a family law case, or a case where it's going to be exceedingly expensive for the litigant to have two attorneys there, that's a different type of situation, because then, you know, maybe the cost can't justify it. But if it looks like it's a big case with a lot of money involved, you know, an appeal is going to be happening, you know, I recommend wherever you are, get an appellate attorney.
Do appellate attorneys ever work on contingency? Is it always just hourly?
Oh, no, we work on contingency for personal injury cases, sure.
Interesting.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, I wish we had more time. First of all, I want to thank my brother, the attorney in Illinois. And matter of fact, last year you got a great award. You were listed as one of the top 1% attorneys. Am I correct, Ron?
That's correct.
And that's amazing. You deserve it.
One of the top 100 best trial attorneys in the state of Illinois.
And you've been practicing over 30 years now. And of course,
36 years.
Well, who's counting? You don't look that old, because that makes me older. But I do thank you for taking the time to come on and talk about your experiences, especially on those high-profile cases in the Illinois Supreme Court, too, and court case in particular, the John Wayne Gacy. And, of course, appellate law wouldn't be appellate law segment without you, Robin Bretzky.
Well, thanks for having me.
You are the go-to people. When I talk to attorneys, who's coming on the show? And they say, oh, I know her. She's great. Oh, I've heard of her. She's great. They all say, you're great. And your firm is so well-known, the law offices of Robin Bretzky. But for those that are listening, for the attorneys, and, of course, others who maybe had a case that want to see exactly, do they have their rights? Were their rights protected? Nobody's happy if a decision goes against them. But what is the best way? And you've got a great website, too.
Thank you very much.
What is the best way to contact you?
You can give us a call, 561-994-6273, or please go on our website, www.bretzkyappellate.com. And we will be very responsive. We have a great staff, and we look forward to helping whoever may need us.
And that's Bresky, B-R-E-S-K-Y. That's so easy. Even I can spell it. And even pronounce it, Gary.
Very good. Don't you have some
wonders never cease.
As well, you share with other attorneys, if I'm not mistaken?
I'm sorry?
You have some resource as well that you're happy to share with other attorneys?
Oh, sure, yeah. If anybody has, you know, questions for us, we answer questions all the time, and especially for the attorneys we work with on an ongoing basis, we'll spend a lot of time helping somebody on a case, even if we're not you know, officially brought in if they need to run a question by us, or if you need a procedural question answered, we're happy to help.
Yeah, I know you're always great with that.
Appreciate that.
You know, Ron, I want you to hang on because one of my favorite segments every program is this week's Legal News in Review. And Robin, don't go anywhere because you got to hear this, what Charles and Gary are going to be talking about. And you're listening to Legal News in Review, and we're going to be coming right back.